Hey everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to the GNU World Order, episode 14, season 11. Cute versus WX. This is it. This is the showdown, folks. I recently had the occasion to really sit down and look at WX Python and PyCute. And this has been a really, really fun experience and very, very educational. And I wanted to share my findings with you. Now, this content has actually appeared elsewhere online, so if you've heard this one already, I apologize for reusing it. It's just something that's been kind of good enough and interesting enough that I felt like it actually was worth reiterating for people who have not seen this. So I will talk a little bit about this, and the reason I'm talking about this at all, I should say, is because there's this little application which has been a fun project for me to work on, and it's called StopGo. And StopGo is a little stop-motion application, a stop-motion animation application that I was working on, that I am working on. For my partner, who teaches animation, because she's a film school graduate, and one of the things that she teaches kids in the area is stop motion animation, and she really was not finding a really really quality stop motion application, stop motion animation program for computers. They've kind of all gone to tablets and stuff. And she wanted to do something a little bit more serious than that. And there are some options out there, but she had some specific ideas about what she wanted. And so I was looking at her requirements, and I, for some reason, I just had it in my head. Actually, not for some reason. I know the reason. I had it in my head that WX Python was the way to go for the GUI, for the GUI stuff. And I thought, I thought this actually because I read, you know, in documentation that WX Python was super easy to get to work on other platforms, because I knew that I was writing this for Linux, but I wanted it to be cross-platform, and I knew PyCute excelled at that, but there were some things that I read online that were just convinced that WX Python much easier install, because PyCute, you know, you have to install Qt. And you have to install SIP, and you have to install the Python bindings. So that's three pretty major installs, and I've done this before. I'd written a little media converter in Qt, not PyQt, Qt itself, back at my old job. And I had had to, you know, it went brilliantly, but it required a bunch of extra stuff to be installed, and I just thought, yeah, I don't want to have to do that. So if I could just do this super easy WX Python thing. Point is, it didn't work. It was a lie. It was incorrect. I cannot tell you how annoying it is when people online speak about things as, you know, just, I think they must talk about it either forget, maybe they forget. Or maybe they're just lying because it looks, sounds bad. I don't know. But, they say things like, oh, you could just use that. And it just seems so simple. And then you try it, and you're just like, this is not what you described at all. Like, this is a 10-step process, and in one sentence, you made it sound like it was just one quick little thing. You know, it's just so annoying. It's kind of like I've mentioned this before. Like, when you go to a project, an open-source project, I mean, heck, you know, like, something like Kdean Live, even not recently, because there's been a lot of development lately. But I remember one of the old Kdean Live sites, possibly still. No, it's changed. Okay, so one of the old ones, it used to say like Kdean Live is a video editor for, Linux, Windows, and Mac. Yeah, and actually they kind of still do it that, but not really. You know, and they really made it sound like it was just. It was for all of those three. And what they really meant was you could sort of, you, with some effort, you could probably port it to Mac or even heck Windows, to be honest. I mean, there at the time, a long time ago, it was just so many install things that you had to install on Windows in order to get Kdenlive live, and it was just, I mean, it's like, yes, I get that technically it is a thing, but that doesn't really mean that it's not what most people think, you know. They don't think they're going to have to build a complete environment to use your application. So yeah, I have a problem with that. So anyway, WXPython and PyQt, they're interesting little frameworks. They're for Python. They give you a GUI for your Python application. It's a big deal. And look, at the end of the day, I have nothing bad to say about either. So I just want to kind of compare them both. The fact is that if you are after a cross-platform thing, you're going to have to do you have to do work. You know, there's nothing that is going to just be a drop-in kind of like, oh look, it's cross-platform now. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, Klaatu, what about Java? Everyone knows Java, you write once and run everywhere. And that's true. Like, Java's really cross-platform. But even then, like, if you throw someone a jar file, they're not going to know what to do with that, honestly. Like, you hand someone a jar file, and even a Linux user probably isn't going to know what to do with that right away. They're going to have to look up how they run a jar file, and what do, and how do they set their, or do they have the right Java libs? How do they set their class path? You know, it's just, it's complex. And so, I mean, you give it to a Windows or a Mac user, and they're really going to scratch their head, because now they have this jar file, and their system is telling them how Java is a security risk, and they should never run anything from as a jar file. You know, it's just, it gets complex. And even Python itself, like, if you throw a Python script over the fence and just you're just like, there, everybody, use that. And even if you've done all the right things, you know, you've used os.path join, dot join, you know, you've done everything correct. You've done your OS detection. Like, what am I on? What platform am I on? What should I use? There's still, you know, if you just throw a folder of Python scripts over, they're not going to know what to do with that right away, because they have to open some kind of terminal and type in some kind of Python command. And unfortunately, in the modern computer world, that's too much to ask. So you're going to have to make some kind of launcher for them. So that now you have to go look and see what kind of launcher creation you've got. Well, you've got something py2exe for Windows, but what is there for that other one? It gets complex. And so with that knowledge, let's look at these frameworks, knowing that there's nothing that's going to be just a drag and drop, hey, it's cross-platform now. Okay? So, the first one let's talk about is the look and feel of the GUI itself. Because, as you do know, many people judge applications on how they look, and especially, I think, as I've said, especially on how it looks in relation to what they're accustomed to. If something looks too different, a lot of people get very scared. Now that gets offset by the fame and the reputation of that application. You know, if it's something super super cool and pretty expensive, then if it looks different, well, that becomes a benefit. But if it's little and open source and it looks different, then it looks, ew, it looks icky. So WXPython's one of their features at the very core is that it is written in C++ as wrappers around the native widgets of its host system, meaning that when you write a code, for instance, for a button in your GUI, you're not getting something that is being that is custom to WXPython. You're actually getting the same object as you would if you had coded an application in whatever native, you know, language that platform uses. Which means that if you are using GDK on your Linux desktop and you run a WXPython application, then you get the magical GDK widget, just as you would in, for instance, your preferences for, XFCE or whatever, or Thunar, or whatever you might look at. They'll be the exact same buttons, that they are using the same thing. So that's kind of cool. It doesn't just look native, it is native. Now, PyQt is different. It uses its own, it's cute, so it's using its own approximation of the widgets that it believes makes sense for the OS that it is running on. So it does really, really nice approximations, but it may be a little bit different. And I've never seen that as a problem, to be honest. As I mentioned, I wrote a little tiny C++ media converter in with Qt for my old job. They just dragged a file onto the converter, and it spit out a file that their Macs could use. And it was very basic, very simple. But these are very picky kind of users. They were people who had an artistic eye. They could spot a difference from a mile away, and none of them ever complained about the interface. They were totally fine with it having a slightly different, go button. It just didn't upset anybody at all. So that was quite nice and kind of nice to see that, yeah, it doesn't actually matter all that much, that it's not exactly the same. And I think that's kind of a product of just the fact that even on these other platforms, there's movement forward, that things are changing, so people are okay that as long as you're approximating the look and feel of their native GUI, I think they feel basically like, yeah, that's within the correct margin. Now, if you're using KDE, of course, on your desktop, then you've got additional PyKDE libraries available to you, so you can actually bridge that gap between PyQt and your Plasma desktop, just so that then you're using really, really the same widgets and things like that. And I don't know that there's anything like that for like Py or Qt GTK. I don't know if there's anything like that. But well, actually, I do. There's some theming stuff, like a Qt GTK theming engine that should bridge that gap as well. Now that I think about it. So that's good. So in other words, both of them, I would say, are neck and neck in terms of look and feel. But I think if you were going to be really super strict about it, it would be probably WXPython would have to win because it is using the literal native widgets. But in practice, I have found absolutely no difference. And of course, all that stuff is themable anyway. So for my little application that I've been using WXPython on, my partner has been building her own custom buttons for it. So we're not even using a lot of the buttons, like the widgets. We're doing custom widgets, so it might not even matter depending on your use case. Okay, let's talk about cross-platformedness. Cross-platform is near and dear to my heart. I really, really believe in it. I think it's essential. I don't see why people would be programming but for all computers. That just doesn't calculate for me. And even my little command line trash application, trashy. It technically works, across many platforms. I cannot test it with Windows because I don't have that available to me, and even on a I don't even have really a Mac right now, but I did at the time. I had access to a Mac when I wrote the application, so I feel like it's probably pretty close. Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you're programming, you may as well assume that it's going to be cross-platform, even if it doesn't necessarily work 100% yet. At least it'll be easier for someone to port when they join on and decide, yes, let's close this gap. So cross-platformedness in both WXPython and PyQt are really, really good. They're meant to be cross-platform. It's something that that they expect from you, and that's nice. Now, as I kind of hinted earlier, the term cross-platform, it's really kind of an ideal rather than sort of this is what you get. This is your the nice little cross-platform bundle. Because even if you're writing Python, which is cross-platform, right, it runs on them all. But I mean, you still have to make accounting. You still have to make you have to account for, make allowances for the fact that the systems are different, and Python won't do that for you automatically. So instead of, you know, pointing something to a certain file, you have to use os.path.join so that now when you point to a file path, Python knows which way to make its slashes go, forward or back slashes. So yeah, it's there's some allowance that you have to make on your own anyway. PyQt itself works very, very hard to shield you from cross-platform differences, allowing for just the common adjustments that you have to do in Python. PyQt pretty much insulates you from everything else. Like, on top of what you've already done on your Python, PyQt can pretty much adapt depending on whatever OS it happens to be running on. I mean, I'm sure there are some exceptions, but I'm going to say that PyQt, for the most part, just absolutely makes it completely seamless. You don't really have to bother with it that much. Now, in WXPython, there are a couple of more platform-specific changes to your GUI code, depending on what platform you're on. And I found this out the hard way. And it was little things, like just little random things. I mean, like the way that it was rendering some elements in within the GUI, I found out that on Windows you have to use this property called use_buffered_DC in order to double buffer the graphics, because apparently on Windows that wasn't, you know, it can't do something correctly unless you do that, and so you get flickering. On all the other platforms it's fine, so you'd never know it if you're programming as I do on Linux. So that's kind of that's a little bit of a strike against WXPython, I would say, because yeah, it's one of those things that you have to test in order to even discover that it's an issue. And I feel like if you have to test for it on that platform, then yeah, there's a bit of a problem, because what if you don't have that platform available? And I know everyone's like, oh, come on, Klaatu, everybody's got Windows available, everybody's got Mac available. But believe it or not, not everyone does. Like, I know that it doesn't seem like it would be a problem, but in real life, it is a problem. If you're not paying for Windows or Mac, you really honestly may not have those things available to you. And that makes being cross-platform a lot more difficult, because now you are trying to use this thing that has advertised itself as cross-platform, but there are all these little tiny caveats about, oh yeah, you should probably remember that if you're on Windows, you may need to use this property or whatever. So, I mean, part of that might be my own inexperience as well. I mean, that's definitely a possibility. But it would be nice if, for instance, I don't know, maybe could we just set use buffered DC to be true if we're on Windows, like on the back end. Like, don't make me set that. Make that some. I don't know if that maybe that's not effective. Maybe that's something that would be stupid to do unless I specifically found that I do need it, you know, like maybe that just, yeah, maybe that's silly, but I don't know. Point being, I would say in terms of cross-platformedness, I would say PyQt kind of wins out on that one. It's a narrow margin again, but I would lean toward PyQt, because it really does. It just, once you, as long as you've got all the dependencies that you need installed, you're just good to go. But, I mean, the same thing is, I mean, in terms of, oh, installation dependency stuff, I mean, you have to install WXPython libraries, too. So it's really, there's no difference in terms of what do I need to get onto, you know, to get my PyQt install versus my WXPython thing. You're still installing a bunch of stuff. So get used to that idea, and then look at what you're going to be doing as you as you're programming. And for that, I would say PyQt makes it a lot easier to just blindly develop on Linux and then throw it at something else, and it's still magically running. And that's nice. That's powerful. Okay. So let's talk about the install procedure since that has now come up. As a developer, you're okay with installing stuff. You grab the libraries, you start using them. It's not that big of a deal. It's normal to you. But obviously the real problem comes into what you're asking your users to do. So installing Qt on any platform is pretty much as simple as installing any other application on that platform. So, you kind of give your users a link to download, you tell them to install the thing that they've just downloaded, and then they're up and running. So that's kind of, I would say, normal. I don't think that most users are really thrown by that kind of thing. Like, hey, before you use my app, go download this and install that. I think people are, especially in open source software land, they're pretty much used to that. And if you're really crazy, you could probably script all that stuff. As part of your installer, you could say you could have them install more, other packages as part of that sort of setup wizard or whatever. Now, the PyQt stuff depends on C++ code from Qt itself, so you have to keep that in mind. So they're not only going to be installing PyQt, they have to install the Qt like SDK or whatever as well. And that's not a terribly small package. It's a lot of clicking around. It's a lot of stepping through install wizards. It's just not a small download. It really isn't. So keep that in mind. WXPython, the install process is pretty simple on Linux and Windows. If I recall correctly, well, on Linux it's just whatever, your package manager. Windows it was just a .exe, and then Mac OS completely just throws it out the window. There are all kinds of problems with it. There's a bug open about it, but the packages haven't been updated, so or they weren't last time I checked anyway, and so it was actually really, really complex to get it installed on a Mac. In fact, I never got it because I don't have that kind of access to a Mac, but it's a problem. So as of at least Mac OS 10.11, 10.11, it was not functional. So that's a non-starter, really. So PyQt would win that one. And just generally, even if I'm looking at outdated information at this point, which because I haven't looked into it lately, I mean not within the past 8 months or so. The point is that I would say Qt as a whole, they've been really, really good about adapting for OS changes, and I've never had a time when I had to, that I could not install Qt on a platform. It was always something that was available. So I would say even, either way, I would just say the responsiveness and the up-to-datedness of Qt probably beats out WXPython pretty much, just as habitually, I guess. So, widgets and features of both PyQt and WXPython, that's kind of a good one to look at because, I mean, obviously there are certain widgets that just kind of that you pretty much expect to have, like buttons, checkboxes, drop-down menus, things like that. That's, well, drag and drop support, tabbed interfaces, dialog boxes, all those things, the creation of custom widgets maybe. All that stuff, PyQt and WXWidget, or WXPython, have. It's not a problem. They're there. Now, PyQt has one really big advantage of, I guess broadly we could call it flexibility. You can arrange, you can float, you can close, you can restore little panels within Qt at runtime, giving your application just complete configurability from the user. So if you've ever used KDE or a KDE application, you may know you might be familiar with this, where you can kind of go in and you can unlock panels. where you can even hide panels. And so, for instance, in Dolphin, my file manager on KDE, there's that sort of side panel on the left, which is kind of just a not a file tree, because that would be actually useful. But it's that sort of classic side panel that a lot of people kind of seem to expect nowadays, where you have like your home directory and then your stupid obligatory music, downloads, documents, videos, those folders kind of listed. I don't tend to use those panels. I don't find them very useful or interesting, so I hide those panels, but maybe you like them, and so you could have that panel on the left, or maybe you would prefer to have it on the right, so you could drag it over to the right. And when you're done, you can right-click on those panels and lock them, and then they don't move around anymore. And that's huge. It's a really, really nice feature, and you see it in a lot of professional applications that use Qt as well. Not that Dolphin isn't professional, but like big applications that are written in Qt, you see that kind of configurability, and it's just super nice. So WXPython does not have that kind of flexibility in any way. I guess on one hand, that means that your application is maybe easier on you as a developer. You don't really have to, there aren't as many aspects of your UI to think about, because you don't have that choice. I guess it sort of doesn't, it doesn't open you up to requests for features that would require more work, for instance. So at my old job, just the most recent one, I was on a team that was developing this application, a rendering manager, which was written in not PyQt, but what's that? PySide is what they were calling it, and it's this PyQt clone sort of. And so they had the floating windows, but one of the features, that inevitably came around was, hey, now that we've got these floating windows that we can rearrange, how do we save those layouts? Because every time they would relaunch the application, the panels would move back to their default place. And they wanted more than one layout, so now you need a layout manager. And once you've created a layout, how do you delete it? So it's just like this whole new thing that came on just because there was that one little feature that people discovered and were actually using, and now they wanted it around all the time. So that was fun. So WXPython, you're not open to that. People won't ask you for that because that isn't a feature there. And I think even the tabbed interface, I seem to sort of recall there being something funky about the way that WXPython does tabs. I could be completely wrong about that. But I just remember it not seeming quite as clear as with PyQt. And again, I could be wrong. That it's a hazy memory, and I could just be thinking of something different. But yeah, there are a couple of differences there, and I don't see that one is better or worse than the other. I think it really depends on what you're looking for. So what about all the moving parts? That's the real question. Because obviously a GUI is a GUI, and it looks amazing, and that's cool, but how does it all work? How does it talk to you? How does the application know when you've clicked the OK button or the cancel button? Or how does it know that you've entered text into a field and then clicked some button to send that text into some other process? That sort of thing. How does that work? Well, PyQt has this down to something called signals and slots. And I'll talk about that in a little bit, because the easier one to talk about is WXPython. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's better, it just means it's a little bit simpler. So, GUI toolkits generally deal with internal communication. So, how something knows when a button is clicked or something like that. With something called a callback. And a callback is a pointer to some piece of code, like a function somewhere. So if you want to make something happen when you click a button, then what you do, or what you might do, certainly with WXPython, is you write a function for the action that you want to have happen. Then when the button's clicked, you call that function that you have in your code, and so the action occurs. And that works well enough. And as long as you couple it with a couple of lambdas, it's flexible enough. So a lambda is when you're making a callback, but you also you hand it some additional information. And it kind of boils down in the end to, like, in terms of whether that actually works, is kind of how elaborate you want the communication to be within that application. And there are obviously ways to make whatever you want happen happen. You just have to understand that the tools that you are given, there's a ceiling there, and at some point you may have to start creating. I don't even know if the right word would be a workaround. I don't know if that's a fair term for it, because it's not a workaround. It's just more code that you have to write. And maybe that's okay, maybe it's not. It just kind of depends. So PyQt, as I've said, it's one of the first things I heard about Qt was its signals and slots mechanism. And I didn't know what that meant then, and then I learned what it meant. And because Qt, I should mention, was the first GUI toolkit that I ever used. That was what I used. So I kind of, like, everything that I know about GUI programming, I know from Qt. Like, that's it. So I didn't really know why signals and slots was a big deal. It's just, I just knew that it was, because, you know, all the Qt people told me it was. So if you look at WXPython's internal communications as like one of those modular synths, you know, where you take a cable and you plug it into this noise output, and you plug it into that LFO, and then you take the other one and plug it from the envelope to the output, and now you've got your sound. You know, that's kind of what WXPython is, maybe. So you could imagine PyQt's method of internal communication as more like a mesh network. And so by this I mean, in the signal and slot system, everything gets a signature. So a widget that emits a signal doesn't even need to know what slot its message is going towards. So there doesn't need to be that cable connecting those two. It just knows it's going to broadcast something with this little signature, with this little token on it. It doesn't even know if there is a destination. All it knows is that it's going to send out this signal, hence the name, signal. So as long as you, the programmer, connect a signal to a slot, that slot gets called whenever that signal is broadcast. And it gets called with that signal's parameters. So slots can be set to listen for any number of signals, and signals can be set to broadcast to any number of slots, because that's what they do. And you can even connect a signal to another signal to create a chain reaction of signals. So you don't ever have to go back into your code to wire things together manually. You just write what you want to happen to, you know, what kind of signal you want to send out. So signals and slots can take any number of arguments of any type. You don't have to write the code to filter out things. You don't have to do them under certain conditions. You just write whatever you want, and it just kind of handles it all. And better still, slots aren't just listeners. They're normal functions that can do useful things with or without a signal. So just as an object doesn't know whether anything is listening for it when it broadcasts a signal, a slot doesn't know whether it's listening for a signal. No block of code is ever reliant upon a connection existing. It just gets triggered at different times if there is a connection. So it's a really, really powerful system, and if you've never used anything but signals and slots, you have no idea why it's a powerful system. So this is one of those things where I'd used PyQt. I was happy with PyQt. I decided to flirt WXPython because I thought it might be easier to get it working on the other platforms. I was horribly wrong, and as a result, I also found out why Signals and Slots is such an amazing system. So really, if you've never used Signals and Slots, you should try it. It's the PyQt system's really, really nice. All right, let's talk about layout, because that's visual. That's not signally and slotty. That's like really visual. That's something that people see right away. And you have to make it all happen. So how do you make that happen? Well, in PyQt, everything, to me at least, again, I might be biased because Qt was my first one, so maybe I'm just used to it, but it is quite logical. I mean, everything, from the widget names, you know, you have things like Q push button, Q dial, Q checkbox, Q label, Q calendar widget. Gee, what could a Q calendar widget possibly be? Oh, probably a calendar. Yeah, it's really, really easy. The documentation's great, so there's just not that much to get confused about on the whole. I mean, there are some quirks, I would say, or some confusion about, for instance, the most base level GUI elements. They've got a Q main window, and they've got Q widget, and both of them, or either of them, can serve as the main window for your application. So you would probably think that Q main window would be the thing that you would want to use, and yet in some examples, you see QWidget being used because you're not really sure why, you know, you're not sure why QWidget is being used instead. And the reason for that, for the record, is that QWidget is actually a raw empty container. There's nothing in a QWidget window. That's just, it's an empty container that you can then put stuff into. And QMainWindow it uses QWidget. But then it adds a bunch of other stuff, like a toolbar along the top, or it gives you the option to have other stuff, like a toolbar along the top and a status bar at the bottom, that kind of thing. So it's kind of a technicality that gets a little bit confusing, but for the most part, all the widgets make a lot of sense in terms of what they're called and how you code them into your application. And there are a lot of different options within PyQt for how you're going to make all of those elements, whether they're the Q push button or a Q checkbox or a panel, where they're going to fall in your application. And there are so many different ways to do this. There are grid boxes, you can sort of almost tables, you know, so that you can kind of lay them out. There are self-expanding sort of spacers. So if you know that you want something to always be on the far right of your application window and something else to be on the far left, you put a little springy spacer in between them, and then you know they're anchored there. If that's not good enough, there's also a drag and drop interface where you can construct your interface from within Qt Creator, the IDE for Qt, and sort of build an interface graphically. But wait, that's not all. You can also use CSS, believe it or not. You can actually generate a CSS file using the name of the widget as your property name. And I think your IDs, I think, and you can do more than that. You can specify them to a finer degree, but you can actually style your application with CSS. It's amazing. It's incredible. It's so nice. So yeah, it's quite impressive, and I would say that in terms of flexibility, once again, PyQt is just it's kind of mind-boggling. It's amazing what it lets you do. A really small text editor, if you wanted to write one, in PyQt, would be about 100 lines of Python code. It would be basic, but that's what it would be. WXPython, the foundational widget of WXPython is the WX window. That's what it's called. Everything in WX Python, whether it is actually a window, or whether it's like a button or a checkbox or a text label, is based upon WX dot window. So I think, like, if you're not getting that, it's because it's confusing. If there was a if there was an award for the most severely inappropriately named class, I think WX window would actually probably be overlooked because it is so badly named. It's just that bad. Yeah, it's WX window makes no sense. Like, even as I'm saying it, my brain does not want to accept that that something called WX window could be the basis for your button. But it's true. So WX dot frame is the thing that you think it is, like the window on your that you can drag around on your desktop. That's a WX frame in WX Python. So in other words, in order to create a basic little WX Python application, you would not use WX window as your base class. You would use WX frame. Very, very confusing. So you place other widgets inside of your WX frame, and sort of you construct your application that way. So you might have a WX panel, which you could think of as a div in HTML, for instance, if that's the way you think, or I don't know what else you would call it really. Well, a panel in a window, I guess, but it's not one of those draggable windows like in PyQt. It's a section of your application. So your default WX panel takes up your entire frame, yeah? That's its default behavior is to, you put a panel inside of a frame and you've got now you have a window that you can use. I'd say overall WX Python has fewer convenience functions than PyQt. So 100 lines of code in WX Python would still get you a functional text editing application, but it would be a far it would have far fewer features than your PyQt text editor. I mean, a great example, probably that's fairly easy to understand, is the copy and paste function, for instance. So in PyQt, copying and pasting is I well, let's just do copy. Let's not do paste because that it's basically the same process. So to copy some text in a text editor in PyQt, it's about, let's say, 6 lines. So, like, we could make a new variable called copy text, and we would set that to be Q action, parentheses copy, comma self, close parentheses. So we're creating this Q action called copy, and it's we're creating this action as copy text. So then you would probably want to cause that to you would want to connect that to something. You want to cause it to send a signal. So you do a copy text. That's what we just created, our little action. Copy text dot triggered dot connect, parentheses self dot copy function, close parentheses. And then somewhere in your code, you would want to make a new function called copy function. So def space copy function, parentheses self, close parentheses, colon, and then self.text.copy, parentheses, parentheses. That's it. That's your copy function right there. One, two, three. Sorry, I said 6 lines. I meant 4 lines. 4 lines of code, you've got a copy function. And then in paste, you would do again 4 more and of the same thing, except instead of copying, you're pasting. And so now you've got a paste function in 8 lines. Copy and paste in 8 lines. In WX Python, you would have to create the copy and paste, like you would that that's that it doesn't you would have to make you would have to figure that out. Like, that's not something that you can just invoke. It's not something that was written for you. You would now have to you have to come up with that. So, like, that would be more than 4 lines. I mean, someone wrote more than 4 lines in PyQt, but you don't have to. So that's why I say it's a convenience function that maybe won't even matter to you. You know, maybe that doesn't maybe that's not even a problem for you. Maybe you don't care, but maybe you do. So it just depends. And that's just an example. I mean, there are other examples. 100 lines of WXPython, I think I could generally say, is not going to give you as much as 100 lines in PyQt. So whenever people talk about, these GUI frameworks and these toolkits and all these other things that exist in the open source world, I think one of the main things is that it's confusing. People start to get, their eyes get a little bit cross-eyed. They don't know, like, what now? What do I choose? I reckon both PyQt and WXPython have strengths and, I guess, probably weaknesses. I don't know, but they each have their own strength, I guess. WXPython, in a way, I would say is, I don't mean this the way it's going to sound, I don't think it's simple. And I don't mean that to mean that if you don't know GUI programming, you should use WXPython because it'll be simpler. No, I don't mean that. I mean it is simple, it is basic. It gives you a set of tools, and that's what you have. And it's a fairly raw set of tools. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but that's what it is. It is a toolkit with things that you can throw together into a GUI, and that's it. I would say compared to Qt, it has fewer dependencies. Like in terms of the actual download that your users are going to have to perform, WXPython has fewer. And that's nice. That's a nice feature. And there's always that little tiny bonus of using actual native widgets. I mean, that's whether that matters or not, the jury's still out for me. Well, it's not out. I don't think it matters that much. But it's a thing. It's a thing that if you write it in WXPython, it is quite potentially going to look exactly like a native application. Like people may not have any idea, especially if you have done the install for them. They may not have any idea that it didn't come on that computer. So that's I guess an advantage. Now PyQt, it's bigger. It's got a lot of dependencies, especially if you're on like non-Linux or non-BSD targets. If you're targeting operating systems that do not ship with open source components or not, not as many obviously as Linux, then there may be a lot of work to do to kind of get that on that computer. And that can be difficult. It can be difficult for users to contend with. It can mean that you as a developer, if you're developing and doing the maintenance of your targets, it might mean that you have to work a little bit harder. It just kind of it all depends on how you're delivering. But especially if you're just kind of if you're writing primarily for Linux or BSD, then I don't think it's going to be even an issue. I mean, they probably already have Qt by now, and maybe they'll have to install PyQt, but generally, it's going to be pretty simple to deliver for Linux. The thing that Qt does bring to the table, as I've said though, is just a heck of a lot of pre-built functions, a heck of a lot of cool widgets and abstraction layers that you just do not have to worry about stuff because Qt is taking care of it for you, and it's just so liberating. It's really, really nice in that way. It might spoil you. That's one thing to be aware of is that, if you're writing for Qt, I imagine that you could become quite spoiled with Qt. Now, that doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, that might be a good thing, that might not be bad because Qt is a lot of places. Qt is really, really popular, more popular probably than you know. It is being used in all kinds of applications, open source and not open source. It's just a huge toolkit that is being used all over the place. So getting spoilt on Qt isn't the worst thing in the world. It's not like getting spoilt on .NET or something, or C sharp, where you kind of use it on one platform, and if you dare try to take it somewhere else, it just kind of falls apart on you. Which these days I don't even know if that's true about .NET, but you get what I'm saying. Like Qt is quite well established, and getting spoilt on it isn't probably a terrible thing. But then again, like maybe obviously we all want to learn more, right? So maybe getting spoiled on Qt and then testing the waters with some other things will be enlightening. I can't tell you how confusing it was for me initially for WXPython. Although I still didn't understand why, but the whole connections, like the lack of signals and slots, I just couldn't understand why the data that I was trying to send along with a button click was not getting passed through to my function. And it turned out in the end, that I had to use a lambda and kind of insert some extra information in there. And it took me the longest time to understand. And then the thing about the WX window not actually being a window, it was just like, are you kidding me? So yeah, it's a good learning experience possibly to step outside of Qt sometimes. Overall, I guess I would recommend heartily Qt, pretty much Qt. Just get an easy way to make Qt get installed on your users' computers, whether you have to do it through an install wizard that you ship with your application, or whether you just have to ship all the libraries with your application. I don't know how you want to do it. It's worth definitely shielding the user from that stage, but everything else after that stage is just, it's gravy. It's wonderful, wonderful mushroom, meat-free gravy. Trust me, it's really nice. But yeah, both of them have their value, and now you know the specifics. I hope that helps. Okay, that's it for this episode, folks. Thanks for listening. You can always reach me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. Thank you very much for listening. Talk to you next week.